Enterprise Time Security Podcast. My name's Ian Murphy. I'm here with Matt Stulin, Director of Core Technologies at Axis Communications. Matt, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm based in Lund at Axis HQ as Director of Core Technologies. I'm part of the R&D organization where I have a number of teams working with different types of core technologies, which is the basis for our products moving forward. I've been with Axis 16 years in different roles. For the last 4 or 5 years, I've had teams working with cybersecurity, media compression technologies, as well as AI, which is focusing on the new AI technologies.
In your keynote this morning, you talked about technologies that have got your attention at the moment. Do you want to give us a quick recap for people who weren't there?
Every year we publish an overview of the key technology trends we feel really impacts the security industry. We try to select trends which are relevant to the industry instead of the large mega trends. I touched upon hybrid systems, where we see security systems moving away from closed down on-prem security systems to more connected systems, but also the trend where security systems are just cloud-based. We see this is converging into a hybrid system which address the customer needs and sensitive to the customer context. The second one is around where we see the total impact of a system beyond financial impacts. We often talk about total cost of ownership, which is the financial aspect. We see more and more end customers looking at the end impact of a solution. This could be both positive things, adding brand value or adding customer or employer safety, as well as reducing carbon footprint or reducing power consumption of a system. The third larger trend we see is around regulation and compliance. In EU, we see a lot of European directives, both on cybersecurity, on sustainability, as well as the AI Act. My take on that is that it's a struggle to overcome and to understand the legislation. In an early phase, the legislation is often a bit vague until you see the real impact. But once we have established regulation, that clears the playing field, so you get a much better understanding on how to navigate this. There's a positive thing to this. When we talk about physical security in the security industry, to make sure that our solutions are used in a way which brings value in an ethical, responsible way, that builds on trust. There are two sides to legislation. Finally, I talked about AI, which is a mega trend in all industries, but it's really affecting the security industry as well. We've been talking about AI in the form of deep learning technologies running on cameras, doing analytics. Over the last 3 years, generative AI has been a transforming technology coming into the security space as well.
So for a lot of people who don't know you, I've come across you many times because I've covered data centers. So I'm used to seeing your devices out there, cameras and surveillance systems. A lot of people wouldn't necessarily think of you as a IT organization. The evolution of IP cameras, all now under the control of IT, means that you've moved into that space. And with IoT devices that are also picking up stuff, how challenging has it been to get that message across that we are as much part of that IT infrastructure as opposed to the old view of, well, you're just part of security?
A really good question. It has taken much longer than we would have thought. Talking to Martin Gehan, our founder, he describes Axis as the first IoT company 25 years or 40 years ago. Because our first cameras was the first IP cameras, which was an IT component in the networks. We're getting to a point now where a number of trends is pushing this integration. Cybersecurity, for one, is really driving this. As an IT manager of a large enterprise, you get from regulation and compliance, but also from a risk perspective, that everything connected to your network needs to be secure. Then they start to find cameras connected. Oh, what is this? Then they start asking questions. Cybersecurity is really driving physical security into the IT departments. Also, I see that with end customers, they start to see more values of physical security or the IP cameras, adding more values, which are business values. That's something which typically goes outside of the scope of the security manager. Of an organization's operational efficiency, and that also drives the integration. The third large trend in this is connectivity or accessibility. you're so used to access all your data on your cell phone or wherever you are, except for your old closed down security system. Customers really want to be able to manage access and get the notifications, alarms. That drives integration as well. These three trends are really now pushing an integration of physical security in IT systems.
One of the things you also talked about was generative AI. If we think about most organizations' perspective on Gen AI, it's, oh, I'll ask it a question, it'll give me an answer. It'll find all those hidden gems in my corporate data, except many times it doesn't at the moment because they don't know how to feed it the right data. But as a physical security company talking about Gen AI, that's quite fascinating. What are the use cases that are driving your interest in it?
It's a complex topic, and that the notion of AI is tricky to define. Looking back, we've used AI technologies in the cameras for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, being deep learning technologies, having the camera being able to detect objects, etc., which is a basis for this. One answer to the question is that we see that the technologies in generative AI, the transformer models, vision transformers, etc., over time they will bring a new level of accuracy and flexibility when we are able to move the generative AI into the camera space.
So when you talk about accuracy, in most cases with a camera we tend to think of a better quality of resolution or better lenses. You mean something slightly different, don't you?
The accuracy of detecting objects. Today in the physical security space, almost all cameras have technology to detect persons, to track persons, to detect vehicles, license plate, color, etc. If you take an image today and paste it into ChatGPT, you can start interacting with the image in a totally different way. So you can ask questions about the contents of the image. And that is a glimpse of what will come 5 years in the future. Totally new understanding of what's happening in the video image or the video stream. Today, the models are really huge, so we can't run them on the camera. It's tricky sometimes to run on a server. But over time, the optimization will give us tools to generate much more nuanced and rich content from the video stream.
So how do you deal with the challenge of identification? Everything from facial identification through to object identification. We know we have issues with bias. We've tended to blame poor quality imagery for the mistakes that are made, which is clearly not the case in a lot of instances. It's about the software, not the physical image to begin with. What are you looking to change? Does this require better software? Does it require new firmware? Does it require custom chip design in order to be able to make those decisions and to improve that accuracy, remove the bias, and create trust in what is actually then decided upon?
There are a few aspects to that. In my keynote, I was talking about that this is an evolution which will take some time. We will be very cautious in the security industry for a number of reasons. Today, we know that the models have bias problems. We know the models have hallucination and a lot of things. So today, the technology is not mature enough to build automation on, because you can't trust the system. They will miss a lot of critical instances. They will draw the wrong conclusions, etc. That will come. But we'll see steps on this. When we talk about bias, it's very much something you need to work on from day one in the data sets when you train models. But also you need to look at how to test for bias in solutions. In Europe, we're seeing the new EU AI Act will really focus on this as well. But it depends on the use case. If it's an access control system, the risk is lower compared to when you have high-risk scenarios. Mm-hmm. You need to look at the use cases to make sure you find the balance. That's why I'm a bit cautious about drawing conclusions on when we can do this, because we need to resolve all of this. It's not only the security industry. The large companies, OpenAI, Apple, Google, etc., they're really focusing on trying to minimize bias, minimize hallucinations, minimize harm from use of the models.
The cost of trying to build those models yourselves is huge in terms of manpower, processing power, technology. Using an open source model developed by somebody else, you would hope in its core data it would have dealt with some of the bias or at least have mitigation processes. Seems a better option. But you can't always assume that your customers would want a model from Google or from Microsoft or to ChatGPT. That's why customers often go to a vendor, they want the model from that vendor. Are you looking at a future where you would allow the customer to bring their own model into that space? Or are we still an awful long way off having that discussion?
In the models we have today, we own the data sets. We have full control over the data sets, which we have in the deep learning models. Moving into the really large models, where you have the ChatGPT type of generative models, the open models have open data sets as well. There are a lot of activities to look at the contents and the distribution and the fairness of the data sets going into the models. That's one aspect how you could treat it. But it depends if we're looking at building systems running on the camera. In that scenario, the compute with the power limitations of the camera will limit what you can do. Mm-hmm. Building systems in a server or mainly in a cloud environment, I would probably see that quite soon we will start to see large enterprise customers wanting to integrate the physical security system into their AI-based open models or their own models, mm-hmm. which are connected to their data. It's more like for the real physical security installations where you run on the camera, that's something where we need to optimize very much. But the other aspect would be to allow integration into system. Then it's super important to be clear on responsibilities. We can take responsibility on the metadata we generate. But if you bring your own model, your own AI, then the end customer or user must take responsibility for the total system.
I wasn't suggesting you would take responsibility for somebody else's model or data. You must be having conversations, I would imagine, with customers at the moment who are saying they want this. How many of them are saying, we have a data set, we just need the technology and the camera to work with? Or are the conversations still more scoping of what it could deliver phase?
It's more on the early stages of scoping, because generative AI is, even to large enterprises, new. And most enterprises are trying to educate themselves to try to do proof of concepts. I have a different keynote where I talk about generative AI being hyper reality. I think we're in a phase where we see some of the early hype around the new generative models. It's easy to do proof of concepts and show things, but we have a number of companies struggling to move from a proof of concepts phase into production. That has to do with either companies trying to apply the generative AI tools to domains which are not really suited yet. Mm-hmm. It's still a learning process. We're in a phase where the initial euphoria around ChatGPT and the potential and possibilities is moving into a more realistic phase. We see a lot of the startups in the US, for example, bringing on VC capital just to boost their potential. They're really struggling to find new financing for new phases. We're in a sort of new phase where people are looking at use cases saying, okay, this technology is not really ready to apply on that use case. And in other cases like customer support or configuration wizards, we start to see use cases which are addressable with the technology. So it's maturing.
How much of this is a challenge of how Gen AI functions? If I look at a specific mature use case, video in casinos, highly mature, highly effective, very accurate in terms of what it identifies, capable of easily tracking individuals, sharing data in real time. This is large video feeds, but they've worked this out across the whole systems. Given that they already have such a well-established, mature video environment with a lot of data and a lot of analysis on that data, is that the sort of industry that you would expect early on to start to look at some form of generative AI to widen the sort of questions they can ask? Or are there other industries that you think might lead this?
It's an interesting question. If we look at casinos and the effort they've put into addressing people counting cards or whatever, they moved away from video to other type of condensed information about statistics. One part of the question is, given that you leave the video feed and you look at the collected statistics, are you able to use AI, the more wider generative AI tools, to analyze that? That's perhaps addressable, but not with the LLM type of technologies. But with the mature large models, you're actually able to start detecting anomalies with a much higher accuracy. Because anomaly detection is notoriously hard, trying to define what's an anomaly in a scenario. The problem with using large language models or vision transformers, these large models on video feeds, is cost. Processing a number of video feeds with high resolution and the cost of compute is going through the roof. With ChatGPT-4, we have limitations. We saw OpenAI just a couple of weeks ago releasing their Strawberry model, O1. One aspect of that reasoning model is the cost of inference running the model. There are different estimates. It could be 50 times more expensive running that model compared to ChatGPT-4. The cost of compute on running these large models on video feeds is still a problem.
Is the conversation really one of, do we use large language or small language models? If we look at how corporates are now starting to adopt generative AI, they're starting to learn the lessons from the idea of big data mining and machine learning. And that is, do you need all of this absorbed into one object, or are you better off separating it out into more focused projects? When we think about security, and I think about how I perceive a large language model and generative AI, I'm afraid I have a slight mental block here in trying to understand what a large language model brings to physical security and cameras and surveillance. I can see it on a very focused basis, maybe a set of much smaller, much more focused small language models. What is it that you see?
It comes back to which use case you're trying to address. Take the simple, basic use case for a video installation. For a system or an algorithm to really understand what's happening in an image. And that's what we're trying to automate. With deep learning, we're able to do object detection, where we find a person. But we really don't understand what's happening in the scene. What we are seeing with the large models is that you could actually get an understanding of what's happening in the scene. Things like occlusions, which is a basic problem. You have a person passing behind something and appearing again. We try to solve those use cases with different types of re-identification technologies. But the algorithms don't really understand depth. They don't understand what's happening. With the large language models, this is a bit speculative. Some researchers are seeing that the large models create an understanding of the world, trained on data, trained on text data. Where you could start interacting with a model saying, okay, what happened to that person? And you get the answer, okay, that person is hiding behind the tree or whatever. When you get that level of understanding, then you could potentially build systems with a much better understanding of the world. With that, you could start building automation where you have less false triggers, etc. The problem with that is to have that understanding, you need a large model. When you start optimizing the model for a very specific use case, you lose the understanding of what's happening in the scene.
But how do you stop the false positive hallucination problem? Whilst it may have a greater understanding of similar types of scenes around the world, if it doesn't truly understand the scene presented to it, you get the misidentification problem. And therefore, what it generates from that is untruthful. You come back to the problem of, is generative AI my science teacher or my creative writing teacher? And when we're doing that for video identification, we sure as heck don't want it being my creative writing teacher.
That's one of the biggest questions. How long will it take until we have resolved the hallucination problems in large language models or in these large models? It's a speculation. I think what we've seen with OpenAI's latest models and the reasoning models is that's a step in the right direction. We start to get reflection into the models. Then the compute cost of the models goes through the roof. That's why I'm really cautious about applying these technologies to the security space, because we need to make sure we have resolved things like bias, hallucination, etc., to have a balanced risk level in this.
We've seen vast sums poured into things like facial recognition over the last 10, 15 years, and it still has inaccuracy problems. Given the variety of things that are going to be seen by camera lenses, be that from an airport to a casino to a car park to a retail environment to any other environment, is there a point where you see perhaps a company emerging and instead of talking about Google or Microsoft or OpenAI or somebody else, that you see a specialist company whose start point is understanding depth of field. We've seen Nikon, we've seen Leica, we've seen others produce software that can do things in camera. Do you think perhaps what is missing at the moment is the involvement of those companies in trying to build an AI-type solution? We know that there's stuff going on in the film industry at the moment.
There are two sides to that. One is if we would see the rise of a startup focusing on the physical security space. If we look closer to what's happening, both in the research as well as in the large enterprises like OpenAI, Google, etc., they're moving in that direction. One driving force is trying to address robotics, where you need to have an understanding of a 3D world. That's driving the depth and the 3D model world understanding.
We've seen some of that with cameras on production lines, high-speed cameras spotting when something isn't quite right. We've seen it being used to spot counterfeit goods and detect the difference between them from real goods, where you have to have incredibly high resolution, but the detail that the software has to do is so complicated to spot that there's just a variation in stitching or a slight variation in colour. Is that where you see potential use cases coming from, then taking on Gen AI to further that? Or do you think that can inform the work on Gen AI?
That's interesting, because some of the quality inspection use cases in production or those kind of environments are almost easily addressable with the technology we have, the deep learning technologies. It's more around the ecosystem and the right partner set up to address. We did a customer success story with BMW using Axis cameras in their production line to do quality inspection. It's interesting to see that they're using our standard video surveillance cameras for the quality inspection. In many cases, you don't need the high resolution, high frame rate. Of course, you have specific cases. They're adding that as part of the production line. We have the technologies to solve all of those use cases today, and we don't need to add the complexity of generative AI to that. Generative AI comes as the next step when you start collecting a lot of statistics from a manufacturing site or production line, to summarize that data, to analyze trends, to extract information from the large data. That's where generative AI could add value.
You come back to that whole problem of the prompt engineer. It's saying to the generative AI model, this system has been running for a period of time. Can you spot points of failure? Can you see this? So you're not asking questions about an image. You're almost asking it to be cognizant of something that may occur in an image that would imply something is happening. That's a whole different level of thought process. Something that as a human you can do, and something we find very hard to codify.
Depending on the use case, you need to go through the details. Some of the use cases are the first step when you process the image and you generate a data set. The problem is if you're just trying to find similarities or learn how to do the quality inspection. What might come up is generative tools to develop that kind of quality inspection. This is a bit speculative, but because running the model as such is not compute efficient, you could use the model to develop the quality inspection to increase the quality of a quality inspection. So it's sort of a meta layer of using the generative AI models to improve the basic quality inspection.
Is there a risk that the discussion around generative AI, whilst not quite a red herring, actually takes the focus away from other gains that can be made beforehand?
Definitely. That goes back to my presentation around the hype around generative AI. There's something called the AI effect, and that is AI is always something which is coming the next month or the next year. When you have solved things, it becomes just software or an algorithm. So today, the hype around generative AI is to some extent confusing. People are trying to understand what is it. To your point, we risk using generative AI technologies to solve problems which we much easier solve with simple tools.
But we come back to the subject matter expert challenge here. Somebody who understands an environment, who's watching it through a set of cameras, can detect immediately something isn't right. They might not be able to immediately articulate how they detected it, why they detected it, and what it is, but something is clearly not right, and they can start a process of solving. From a computational model, that's incredibly hard to capture. I've dealt with expert systems since the mid-1980s. So I know how hard that is. How do we begin to capture that subject matter expert capability to form our first steps forward into codification? When we look at organizations that are thinking about Gen AI and automation to reduce staffing, they get rid of people and then they realize they've lost so much more than just somebody sitting on a desk or on a production line doing something that they thought was menial. Those other things that they hold in their head have gone and lost forever. Where do we begin to build that level of requirement as we go forwards?
One aspect is the technology behind this. If you look at the OpenAI, the maturity of steps they are taking into this, moving into self-reasoning or reflection and agentic workflows, we're not there yet. There is a really good parallel with a book by Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow, which is a must read. Much of his research was how do people make decisions. He was outlining two thinking paradigms. One is the type one thinking, which is reflective, when you just react on something without reasoning. Mm-hmm. That's where we are with generative models today. We can train them to do something like quick response, but in that area you can't really build knowledge, the kind of knowledge you build as an expert in a domain. The next level of thinking, the level two, model two, is when you start reasoning, you start reflecting, draw conclusions, etc., which is typically what we do when we think slow. That's super interesting if we're making steps into that with the new models from OpenAI. There are different opinions of this. My take on that is we have a long way to go until we have a model which could start to build knowledge, reasoning, etc. And that's what you need to be able to address these very vague quality inspection, building an understanding of what's happening. But again, once we've built that knowledge, we could move from understanding a problem into creating a solution which is much more compute efficient.
You talked about costs a couple of times here and the problem of the amount of compute and everything that's going to be required. When we think about physical security, it's generally seen as a low-cost model. Doesn't matter what people pay for the cameras and the systems, the whole operation is seen as a much lower cost than fully automated, highly complex systems. Can we reasonably get any form of AI-driven physical security system into the cost bracket that currently is demanded by the customer base?
I think it depends on the timeline. Today, no. You can see steps in this. Today, we have a basic level of automation with simple analytics, cross-line detection, loitering, these kind of alarms. But we get missed alarms, we get false alarms. If you build a layered solution where you use analytics, the current cost-efficient solution, to generate potential alarms, and then you add generative AI tool upon running on those alarms to qualify the alarms, then you manage the cost level. You're not analyzing 4K video 24/7 in 30 frames per second. You're just analyzing the potential alarms. That's a way to scale a solution.
So that will sort of address the reconnaissance problem. Somebody's looking to see your response times, so they trigger things. If they trigger them on an automated system, it's just an absolute. Whereas if you can then have the intelligence over the top to say, oh, hang on, we dispatched somebody there, there's nothing there, then there's another one here, and you start to see a pattern, it would be able to spot a reconnaissance much earlier and therefore potentially prevent a breach of whatever.
This comes back to anomaly detection. This is not a normal pattern. 5 o'clock every morning, we have something is suspicious. Apart from that, we will see generative AI models being used in wizards or search functionality, which is quite close. This layered approach that you add a layer of more accuracy through a large language model or a generative AI model, that's a way to manage scalability. The bigger question is, do we think that we are able to condense the models to a level that we can run them on-prem or even on the cameras, or part of the model? Is that also a scalability solution? No, that's what's been going on for the last 1.5 years. much focus has not been on the next generation of models. It's been more on reducing the size of the models to reduce the cost of running the models. This goes for OpenAI, Google, Amazon. They put more effort on optimizing the models than increasing the accuracy and the capabilities of the models.
I'm aware time is short, so I'm going to ask one last question. We're back on stage, and somebody asked, where are we and what should I expect in the next 5 years? What would you tell them?
Around the generative AI.
Around the whole idea of generative AI and physical security.
Good question. One immediate answer is, okay, you will start to see generative AI-based tools like text-based search coming into VMSs, assisting tools, condensing video material, etc. But another way to answer this is you will probably see a number of startups and applications over-promising and failing to deliver good enough quality. We will probably see it's a learning period, and we need to find the balance, find ways to mitigate risks, mitigate biases, etc. That will take some time. Over the next 4 or 5 years, we'll see a lot of hype in some use cases. We'll see a gradual deployment of basic functionality. Then we need, as an industry, we need to learn to find the balance between what we can automate with low risk and high quality, and what use cases where we want to have a human in the loop. It will be a learning journey.
Mats, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.